going deep. I feel like Kalo on the Miami Heat. The words I speak off this sheet are like a three-peat. I don't just hop on a track, I bring running cleats. I'm a player for real, more than an athlete. Let my mama tell it, could have ran for the Senate. Instead I penned it for Donovan Bennett. I'm cemented, this a deep dive. In your headphones or a long drive, up close and personal, just like you courtside. There ain't no out of bounds here, no offsides. We going live in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. You are now tuned in to Going Deep with Donovan Bennett.
Thanks so much, Capital. It is the Going Deep podcast. I am Donovan Bennett, and I'm going deep on all things mixed martial arts here in Canada with a couple UFC fighters that just had an outstanding showing at UFC 315 in Montreal. The atmosphere was outstanding, but so was the combat, especially when it comes to our Canadians. I'm talking to two who are fiercely proud of being Canadian, but got to their level in the sport in different ways. And those two are Mike Malott and Jasmine Drusevicius. Both have become fan favorites for their likable personalities. And ironically, both have teamed up with Skill Trades College, hoping to inspire people who look up to them and are interested in the fact that they found their career maybe off the beaten path, to tell them that they can do the same and potentially do it in the skill trades. I'm going to talk to them about that, but also talk to them about the wave that Canadian fighters are on right now and the wave of support they're finding in our country, because Canadians aren't just throwing elbows. It's elbows up right now, as Canadian pride is at a height we haven't seen in a long time. First, let's talk to Jasmine about the fact that she's delaying walking down the altar because she wants to continue to walk into the octagon. Let's go deep.
Thanks for joining, and congrats.
Thank you.
Let's start at the beginning. How did you get into martial arts in the first place?
I kind of found it organically. Like, I mean, I did do a couple like classes before. Like, it's not like I didn't know at all what martial arts was, but I really jumped into it when I met, at the time, you know, just meeting him, but now he's my fiance and everything, and coach. His name's Chris. But when we first met, he was cornering a UFC fighter. He was working at the Brock University as a wrestling coach, and there's like Olympians, world medalists. Like, he, you know, he was already in that world. So I met him, and then he introduced me to MMA and, you know, fighting in the UFC. And I mean, I watched the UFC, but I never knew that there was kind of like a route there. And I was like watching, I'm like, this is very interesting. I really enjoy like seeing this. And then I watched them spar, and I'm like, okay, I think that I could be into this. I really like this. Like, I'm going to start training. I had the opportunity to take my very first fight. I had been training for a while, like maybe 6 months at the time. And I'm like, I'm going to take one amateur fight, and then we'll go from there. And after doing that one fight, I caught the bug, and like everything in life kind of got turned down after that.
And what was the initial goal? Or was there a goal?
There wasn't. No, there wasn't. I was just like enjoying it. And then once I found how much I enjoyed it, and like the daily grind, martial arts, like you learn so much about yourself and about life and about everything, like through martial arts. And so it's like kind of once I tasted that, I just kind of caught the bug. And I would make little goals in the time. I would say, okay, I want an amateur fight, another fight, a couple things, you know, then I want to go pro, and I want to fight for a title, and then I want to make it into the UFC. So it's like little goals, and then now we're here.
And what did you learn about yourself through the process?
Oh, I've learned countless things. I guess one would be really like how hard you can push yourself, and like kind of putting all my eggs into one basket and fulfilling that goal. Like, within martial arts and within getting ready for a fight, I have to be like on my diet, on my cardio, on my training. I can't let anything slide. Like if I tell myself I have to run 3 times a week, then I truly hold myself to that accountability. Whereas before, I guess I wouldn't be so strict with it. You know, I'd be like, oh, I want to run 3 times a week, but then I would only run once or twice. But, you know, having such a momentous goal in mind and knowing what it would take to do it, and then actually going through the day-to-day to be able to do it, I guess it was like very like empowering. And kind of once I realized, you know, I could do this, then it's like I can make that goal even bigger and bigger and bigger, and every time I can challenge myself more and more. And I feel like martial arts has really like taught me how to be able to do that.
You mentioned not necessarily knowing what the route would be for someone like you. Now, because of your success, there's many Canadian women who see a route to the UFC in Canada. What does that mean to you?
That's amazing to me. Like, I know how challenging it was for me coming up in the sport. We didn't have martial arts really in Canada. Like, amateur MMA was illegal in Canada up until I think like last year. So I had to travel through the States, and like, of course, with COVID going on, it's very hard to travel and very hard to like kind of like pursue my dreams. And so to be able to be a female kind of in the forefront, like showing martial arts, I had the opportunity to fight in Saudi Arabia. I was the very first women's martial arts fight there under the UFC banner. So to be able to make history like all over the world is like very, very empowering and, you know, such a humbling experience.
What are some of the messages, I'm sure, that fill your various inbox you're getting from other Canadians, from other women, now that you've been on this journey?
I've been getting so many just like supportive messages, just saying like, hey, just rooting for you, or like those ones. But then there'll also be women saying like, hey, I thought that it was too late for me, or I thought that I wouldn't be able to kind of be the only woman in the gym, or I like, thank you for giving me the courage to be able to actually step foot into the gym. Like, it, I feel like that's kind of the hardest part for, I mean for everyone, but especially for younger females. It's like, it's intimidating to go into the gym for your very first day. You look at the mats and it's all guys. Like, there's no other girls on the mat. It can be very intimidating. So I love hearing like those messages, or I'll get messages from people showing me their daughters, and they'll watch my fights and then they'll say, oh, look at my daughter, and she's whatever, like doing something on her brother or on like a pillow or something, you know. Like, I love getting those messages. It just like warms my heart, and to see little girls like developing the confidence that martial arts brings. I think that's like a confidence that kind of becomes internal, that can never be taken away from them.
Mixed martial arts and combat sports is an area that women haven't seen themselves in historically. Ironically enough, skilled trades is in very much the same way. I understand you're passionate about eradicating that.
Yeah, I really believe that there's like the same characteristics in the skilled trade industry as there are in martial arts and there are in fighting. You can't just watch a YouTube video or read a book and think you know how to do the job. It's like you have to go in there and make the mistakes, learn the lessons the hard way. And it's like the same kind of like grit and determination that is in martial arts. It's the same with the trade industry. And, you know, the skilled trades college, they have these amazing scholarships and programs that they're helping people out. It's like just like the same as in martial arts, like sponsorship and building, you know, the older veterans are kind of like building and showing the newer people like how to do the job and how to be productive. And I just think that like with the building champions scholarship program that the Skilled Trades College offers, it's like an unbelievable experience and an unbelievable thing that like it's such a beneficial thing for the Skilled Trades College as well as for the people getting in there. It's like very easy to be able to transition the two.
You mentioned sponsorship. You're now undoubtedly one of the faces of the sport in our country. Are you noticing an interest in corporate Canada trying to partner with you to help you on your journey?
Well, I mean, I just fought on the weekend, so I mean, I hope that more are coming in. But like right now, I have the great relationship with like the Skilled Trades College, and like I would say that's kind of one of my main sponsors. That I enjoy that I have sponsors that I truly like believe in, and I can actually get behind.
You one of the reasons why both fans. And the country at large is really excited about you is because you're so outspoken. Post-match sometimes is as exciting as the match. Where does that come from?
I just speak from the heart. I used to worry like, oh, I'm going to look silly. I'm going to say something dumb. I'm going to look a certain way. But I've kind of let that go, I guess, because no matter what, I'm probably going to say something silly at some point. And so I've just accepted that, you know, everyone makes mistakes. And, you know, if I speak from the heart and if I'm always genuine, then it will always come off, you know, how I want it to.
Well, something you have said that isn't silly, but you've been outspoken about is where you think you should be in the sport. You've been open about the fact that you want to work towards a title shot. Mm-hmm. Now, what does that look like for you? When and how do you think it happens?
I hope soon. I'm going to stay ready. There's two other belts that were on my same card that were girls that were within my division, as well as, you know, next week or 2 weeks from now, there's a couple other girls that are fighting that are in the division. So it kind of will see where everyone lines up, but I'm hoping maybe one more fight and then the next fight will be a title opportunity. But you know, I'm here and I'm active, and I feel like the UFC respects that. They encourage that type of behavior, and anyone who's like genuinely trying to fight for that number one spot, I think it's rewarded. There's girls that are fighting once a year, twice a year. Like, they shouldn't be rewarded for that type of behavior. We've got people that are active and fighting and coming for that number one spot.
There's a future card in Toronto not too far in the distant future. Are you manifesting that the stars align then?
That's the goal. I'm hoping, you know, I headline that card and in Toronto, that would be absolutely unbelievable.
What was it like being part of the card in Montreal, in Canada, being celebrated as a Canadian fighter and not the only Canadian fighter on the card?
It was awesome. You know, GSP kind of paved the way for Canadian martial arts, and him being from Montreal and the Montreal crowd was crazy. When I was walking out, like, you could feel the energy from that, and I feel like that just like really, really feeds me to be able to go into the cage. But, you know, the Montreal has so much history, fight history, martial arts history with it. And I think that because of GSP and because of what he's done for Canadian MMA, it's really, it showed on that night. And it shows like how crazy the Canadian fans are for the fighting.
You have a lot of Canadian fans. GSP is one of them. What's that like when you interact with him, knowing that he has a lot of belief in you?
I feel like I still get like the star eyes. I'm like stammering with my words every time I'm talking to him. So every time I'm like, I never know what to say. I've only had the opportunity to speak with him a little bit, but yeah, I look up to him so much.
He's not the only former champion that has become part of your fan club. On IG, Conor McGregor was commenting that you deserve a title shot. When you see that recognition from a champion, what does that mean?
Real recognize real. Conor is, he's an inspiration to me. I've had the opportunity to go over to Dublin and see where he's from and the gym that he trains at. And it was very, very inspiring for me to see because, you know, I didn't come up in martial arts. I didn't know the world before. So to see where he came from and what he's become and what he's made of the sport and how much recognition that he's brought to the sport, it shows me like it's possible for me to do that too in Canada, like for me to even have 1% of what he's done would be amazing.
Let's talk about where you come from and what's made you. What is it about St. Catharines that produces so many people who have been impactful in the country and now are producing great fighters?
I think we just have a little bit of like a hotbed going on at Niagara Top Team right now. It's we've got a group of people that are very dedicated, like hardworking people, and we all feed off each other. There's always somebody in camp, and so other people can't be taking days off, can't be leaving, can't be neglecting their teammates. Yes, it is an individual sport, but it's also a team sport as well, and we have such a great community that everyone is very supportive of each other and helpful to each other. So I think that's what's really kind of allowed me to excel the way that I have. Like I have amazing coaches and amazing teammates, and if it wasn't for them, I wouldn't be where I am.
One of those teammates is your fiance, and it's an exciting time, but looking at the timeline, how are we balancing the prospect of walking down the aisle for a ring or walking to the ring for a belt? What's that look like in the near future?
Well, I am thankful that Chris and I are on the same page. We're going for the belt first, and then we understand that we'll have time to get married. You know, we got a short window right now, and it's an enjoyable process to be able to be chasing a dream together. Like, I'm thankful that I have him to see from a little bit farther of a view than me. You know, I'm too close to the action sometimes, so it's challenging, but I'm very thankful that he can oversee and like watch, okay, you're training too hard, you're not training enough. Like he's managing everything for me. And then afterwards, we'll be able to sit down and make a beautiful wedding and actually enjoy it instead of trying to like cram a wedding in between camps.
Yeah, a UFC title belt might be a nice wedding accessory.
Yeah.
So those pictures would be epic. Whether it's going for recognition in the sport or just to have a healthy and active lifestyle, why would you encourage more women to be involved in mixed martial arts?
I think it's the confidence that women get. Like there's, I know it sounds like silly, but if you know kind of the basics on how to defend yourself, then it just gives you a slight sense of confidence that's like inwardly that isn't really like shown that much, but you're just a little bit more comfortable all the time in all situations. you know, martial arts, you get put into uncomfortable situations, both mentally and physically in training. And you have to kind of unravel that puzzle and be able to think critically in an uncomfortable situation. And I feel like that translates very well into life. We were talking to Chris, has a daughter, she's 12 years old, and she does wrestling tournaments and jiu-jitsu tournaments, and she had to do a speech at school. And we were driving home, it's like, oh, how was your speech and everything? And she's like, it was good, I was nervous. And I'm like, were you more nervous for your speech or for a wrestling tournament? She's like, oh, definitely a wrestling tournament. I'm like, that's exactly why we make you do wrestling tournaments, so that when you have to do speeches or when you have to do uncomfortable things, driving tests, whatever it is that kind of gets that, you know, anxiety going, to have it in martial arts, to feel that feeling and have to like decipher your way through it. It is all life is martial arts. Martial arts is life. It's the same. So I think that if women do martial arts, you'll have that feeling, that confidence, that inner confidence.
And lastly, whether it's women going into field that they're not historically considered to be in, like the skilled trades, or whether they are pushing themselves physically in something like martial arts, what would you say to them in terms of getting over that fear and dealing with that anxiety and building that confidence?
I'd say just keep doing it. Like, you know, the hardest day is the first day, just getting in there and doing it the first day. And then it's like the second day is the second hardest, and then eventually it will get easier and easier and easier and easier. But, you know, just stay consistent with it and stay strong, and there's gonna be tough days, but understand that, you know, there's gonna be a better day next. And you'll be going like this, but you'll actually be going, you know, upwards too. And I just think that you'll feel so proud of yourself, you know, looking back, say 6 months, a year later, you'll just feel so much joy within yourself.
Well, a lot of Canadians are really proud of you. After you've removed from the height of your career, you might be able to look back and be proud of the fact there's many more women, both in the octagon, but also in a diverse field like skilled trades. So thank you in advance.
No, thank you. It was awesome chatting.
Thanks so much to Jasmine. When you talk about Canadian UFC fighters, Mike Bellotti is a name that we've talked about for some years. He's continued to progress and moved up the card ever so steadily. And I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that in the future, we see him as the main headliner on a massive pay-per-view night, potentially in this country. It was just such a big part of the spectacle that we saw in Montreal for UFC 315, and it seemed to take a toll on him, not only physically, but emotionally. And so that's where I start our conversation with Mike Bellotti. Let's go deep. Well, Mike, congratulations. And, you know, I feel like, you know, multiple times now, as you continue to just ladder up and progress in the sport and in the division, we're congratulating you on new milestones and achievements. But Montreal had to have been pretty special. You were emotional, both hype, but also emotional in terms of showing us a different side with the tears. What was that like for you, both physically and emotionally?
That was a once in a lifetime type feeling, man. Absolutely incredible. I mean, the only other night that would maybe compare was UFC 289 in Vancouver, where we had all the Canadians win, and then I was the last one to get the win. You know, those are, you know, two nights that are once in a lifetime type feelings. Absolutely incredible. Walking out in Montreal to 20,000 fans, you know, behind me, behind Canada, behind Canadian MMA, and then being also as much against my opponent, who just played his role very well as the heel, you know, and like authentically so. I've you know heard him in interviews, and he's like, "This is who I am, man. This is the role I play well." So, you know, it's you know he likes to fight with a chip on his shoulder, and he likes to get people riled up, and he likes to be the bad guy. I'm like, well, you found the place to do it, man, because everybody hated you, and but he, you know, he's a dangerous fighter, man. So it was a real fight I was going to have to get into. You know, it went very well, but I was prepared for a war. I was prepared to have to go through hell in that fight and come out on the other side.
We're seeing it a bit, you know, certainly in the hockey playoffs and soccer internationals, go back to Four Nations, and people talk about the atmosphere around Canadian athletes performing and what it's like right now, given everything that's has gone on geopolitically. Is that tangible for you? Can you feel a crowd and can that help performance?
Yeah, I felt that. I mean, leading into fight week, throughout camp and then leading into fight week, you know, there's obviously some tension right now kind of between the US and Canada in many ways. And, you know, the added kind of, I guess it could be pressure, but just the added factor of being the only Canada versus American matchup on the first Canadian pay-per-view since the American election. And think since things have kind of changed a little bit, you know, you can definitely feel it. You can feel it within Canada that there is extra added tension. And then I feel like those type things always play through in a more exaggerated way through sports. Sports is kind of the catalyst for working things out in a lot of ways. You saw that with the Four Nations hockey game where, you know, unfortunately the Canadians were booing the American national anthem, which, you know, politics aside stuff, it's like, it's, you know, kind of disrespectful, right? But, you know, so it did make some people angry. You know, Canadians were angry before, and then the Americans were angry after. And, you know, that was one of the things my opponent talked about. He's like, somebody's going to have to pay for this. And I believe he had every intention of making me pay for it, right? And wasn't able to do that on Saturday. And I'm grateful for that. I'm happy the way things turned out. But, yeah, man, it felt like another heightened factor of like, all right, there's so many things that you can talk about that create pressure throughout a, you know, a fight camp, whether it's, you know, you want to make money, you want rankings, you want a belt, you want this, that, you want to have a great performance, whatever. You don't want to let these people down, whatever. And then there's just that another added thing of like, all right, well, like the whole country's counting on you, man. You don't want to be the guy to ruin the night for everybody, right? So it was something I acknowledged. I think not being in denial about that and pretending that it doesn't exist can almost be dangerous in a way. So just acknowledging it and being like, okay, man, this is a real thing. It doesn't actually affect what happens in the octagon. I'm going to acknowledge those feelings, and I'm going to acknowledge that factor, but I'm not going to let it affect my performance. And I'm really proud with how I dealt with things throughout the week and camp, and, you know, it was a camp and fight week full of adversity. And, you know, really happy that we made it out on the other side with, you know, the success that we had.
You've acknowledged your Canadian pride well before, you know, it was something that people are doing increasingly now. It's tough to go on, you know, Getty Images or Google and find a photo of you not with a Canadian flag around. You've got the Maple Leaf Militia, not just for you, but for your camp, for your sponsors. How important is it, has been, for you to make sure that you're investing in the country and you're uplifting it where you can?
Yeah, man. I mean, this is my home. I love Canada, and I think that was, you know, I've always been proud of where I'm from and my home, but I think that was, it kind of became a little bit more of a part of my identity in a way when I moved to the US. I lived in California for a while, and I was the Canadian, you know? So I just, that, you know, I just thought of, you know, you're never more proud than when you're out of your country. You're like, you know, man, this is where I'm from, and I'm going to represent my country well. And I want to do well for my country. And then it just kind of kept building and building, and then being able to make it to the UFC and be a guy representing my country at first outside of the country, fighting in Jacksonville, Florida, fighting in Las Vegas multiple times. I'm like, all right, man, like I'm representing my home. Like this is really cool. And so it was just very meaningful for me from the very beginning. And then, you know, like you said, it feels like Canada is very patriotic right now. You know, the last few months, it feels like everyone's kind of unifying a lot more than they were before. It feels like a less politically divided, even though there's obviously still political division. It feels less politically divided and more like everyone's just behind the Canadian flag and just wanting to see the best for Canada. So it's a cool time to be Canadian, and a cool time to be a Canadian UFC fighter and have these pay-per-views and big cards in Canada and get to represent my home on an international stage.
Someone who's been clear and vocal of their support for you has been GSP. What's that like for you when one of the greatest to do it of all time, the OG for the sport in our country, goes out of their way to say, like, I see what you're doing and I really respect not just what you've done, but the way you've done it.
It means the world to me, man. I used to have a George St. Pierre poster on my wall, you know, when I was a teenager, like, that guy's the man. I grew up idolizing that man, and he molded my career in so many ways where, like, you know, he was the first guy I saw throw a Superman punch from the lead hand. I'm like, dude, that didn't even occur to me that you could do that. You know, like, he was the first guy to see really tying striking and wrestling in together and really being like a full, complete mixed martial artist. Like, this guy's a black belt in jiu-jitsu, out wrestling collegiate wrestlers, out striking elite strikers. Like, he was just perfect everywhere. I'm like, man, that's such an inspiration. So, you know, as a young kid, especially just trying to just do my best GSP impression as a martial artist and steal as many tricks as I could from him. So to have him, you know, vocalize support for me, and, you know, he was nice enough last summer to FaceTime me and give me some advice on my career and an upcoming fight. And, you know, I took that advice to heart and didn't take it lightly, and just, yeah, feel very blessed to have one of the greatest fighters of all time, certainly the greatest Canadian fighter of all time, give me just, you know, anything positive. It's really cool.
So cool that you have him in your corner. What was that advice and how did it help?
The advice was, I had a fight coming up, and he's, you know, it was like 3 weeks out from the fight and some change. He's like, oh man, how's camp going? Like, the UFC put us in touch. And I was like, oh, camp was going really well, man. I broke my nose on Saturday though, pretty badly. So I just had it put back in place. And he's like, oh man, so the fight's off. And I'm like, no, I'm still planning on fighting. He's like, are you broke or something? I was like, no, I'm doing all right. But, you know, you gotta overcome adversity or whatever. And, you know, I'm sure you went into fights injured before. He's like, yeah, I went into, like, very matter of fact, he's like, yeah, I went into every fight injured. He's like, but there's a difference between going in injured and going with your face broken. And I was like, oh crap. Like, is George telling me not to fight? He's like, you do what you want, but I don't know if that's a great idea. And so I was kind of stressing about that for a few days. I'm like, dude, how do you argue with George St. Pierre? And I'm like, man, maybe I should just still fight, whatever. And then luckily I didn't have to make the decision. My opponent pulled out with an injury. And my manager's like, okay, there's a pay-per-view this weekend. The UFC's going to match you with somebody else. And I'm like, honestly, man, I talked to my coaches about it. And they're like, dude, we didn't want to say it because you had a fight and you seemed locked in. Do not take this fight, bro. Like, your face just had to get put back in place. No, man, don't fight. Like, you can't train for the next couple. Like, you can't spar anymore. You can't wrestle. You can't do anything. Like, the second you get popped, this is going to leak. And we're fighting in Denver at elevation. Like, no, dude. I know you want to get back on the winning track, but no, not the call. So we just told the UFC, like, hey, actually, maybe don't look for another one for me. Let me just fight in Edmonton later in the year. And I texted George after. I'm like, thanks for the advice, man. Like, I was too invested. I was too in it to see the big picture. And I appreciate you giving me that advice.
That is classic. I love his line. Are you broke? I hear him saying it with his kind of, you know, dry, matter of fact, sense of humor and accent. I think though that speaks to your nature, and though as a fighter, you like to be active. You like to continue to work on your craft. What do next steps look like? What are you hoping for, and what are you hoping to map out for the next year or so? Because as you know, not too far from now, there's another big card in Toronto.
In Toronto? I'm hearing something different. You hearing Toronto?
Yeah, what are you hearing?
Well, I don't know if I'm supposed to say what I'm hearing.
Don't say. Yeah. Well, okay. Actually, you, what you're hearing, I'm sure, is better than what I'm hearing. But yeah. What does it look like for you? Moving forward.
So yeah, I'm hearing that there are rumors, and I think it might have been mentioned. So I just don't want to be the guy to spoil something, like the guy that's I was supposed to say something. It was kind of behind the scenes, but one of the reporters said something on the weekend too. I'm hearing rumors of another Canadian card later this year. I assume that's what's next. Like I said, I'll fight outside of Canada if that's what's offered. But if there's a Canadian card and I can get on it, that's what I want. For the immediate, what's next? Some rest and relaxation, man. These camps are nightmares, dude. I went through it. The only lie I told all week was best camp of my life. You know, like everything else, I'm like, this is who I am in genuine. That was and I lied on that one. I'm like, that's not true, dude. I was like, there was some really great parts of camp. And then there was some stuff where just like, dude, I pretty much didn't train. Of the last 10 weeks, I pretty much didn't train for 5 of them. Like, it was rough, man. There were some rough times. There was a lot where I'm like, man, I feel really good. But there was some stuff I had to overcome this time. So that just gives me even more confidence going into the next one, knowing like, hey, when it really hits the fan, you still rise to the occasion. When there's camp goes horrible, tons of things fall through, you know, you got to represent your, there's pressure. You got to represent your country. There's a guy, you know, talking trash. There's a dangerous opponent for, there's all this stuff. It's like, hey, when it comes down to it, remember who you are. Like, you're the guy who rises to that occasion. So that was a great fight for me in many ways, but not the least of which being, you know, that confidence boosting of like, man, I am that, you know, I'm the guy who rises to the occasion.
Love that. You're also rising to the occasion to spread some insight and some awareness on the skill trades and why people should consider them and why they're badly needed. Where does that interest and that passion come from? Do you have a background in them? Or now that you've got some downtime, can I get you to be handy and get some stuff done around the house?
Dude, I always focus on a little project after the fight. So I don't have one set. I have some ideas for this one, but after my last fight, my dad and I built a pond in my backyard for my wife. She's always kind of wanted one, so we surprised her with one. But yeah, man, I was never in the trades, but Skilled Trades College has been on my team for the last year and a half, basically, and has been just amazing to work with. I wasn't in the trades, but I worked some, you know, labor jobs, just helping carpenters and stuff like that in between, courses in the summers between years in college. But yeah, man, they're great guys. They're the kind of people I want to work with. It's like the people I want to work with are like the people that I want to see more of in our society. And like, that's how I want to conduct myself. And that's how I want the people around me to conduct themselves. And like having Skilled Trades College have this Building Champions scholarship program and invest in like, not just trying to make money, but just trying to help the community be like, look, we have an opportunity to give young people opportunities to learn new skills, provide for themselves and help other people. It's like that. It's just the trickle effect of like, we're going to help people who can then help people who can then help people. And just like, it's going to have a ripple effect throughout society where it's positive for everybody. So it seems like a natural fit. Like that's what I hope to do with my career, whether it be while I'm competing or after I'm done competing and coaching and helping people make the most of themselves and be happy and be helpful and be able to protect themselves and feel good about themselves. And like, so to partner with Skilled Trades College, who's also doing that is, it just feels like a natural fit and couldn't be happier with the partnership.
Love it. It's a perfect partnership is, you know, both sides. You're talking about people who are grinders who, you know, put in an honest day's work, but people at the end of the day that are just so happy to help and do it with a smile on their face. So we look forward to you doing the same. Certainly, you know, as you've done for a long time in the sport and become one of the faces of the sport in Canada, you put a lot of smiles on Canadian faces once again. So don't jeopardize your face in the process, but keep doing it.
Always a slight risk, but I'll do my best, man. Chin tucked, hands up, elbows high, let's go.
All right, we've got more conversation. Someone who can fight if they need to, but as an NHL player, was much more known for his offensive skill. Trevor Linden is on Going Deep, coming up next. Stay with us.
My name is Lucille Bryan.
I'm Clifton Bryan.
My grandson is a show.
And I'm so happy that you're listening to Going Deep with Donovan Bennett.
I'm so glad that he had the show. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Grandma and Granddad. It is the Going Deep podcast. We've got Trevor Linden in the house, 20-year NHLer, represented Canada on multiple occasions. Player that my grandfather would watch and scream at, not for, because he was a hardcore Leafs fan. But awesome. but he was, like many Canadians, the person that as soon as his team was out, okay, where's the next Canadian team? And they're now my team, and I'm cheering for them the same way I did for my team after, you know, the regular season in all 82. Now, I don't know if that's the case in Alberta, right? That rivalry runs a little bit deeper. But now the bulk of the country is cheering for the Oilers. We'll get into that, but I want to get into you and what life is like for you. And maybe some of the secrets that you can share, because you look like you could still play. You look like you're still enjoying yourself. And I'm at that age and stage where you try to holistically take stock of, okay, am I being intentional and smart with my eating habits and my sleep and my finances, right? Yeah. And you seem to be A1 and all of the above. So what is life like for Trevor?
You know what? Boy, retired in 2008. I was kind of not sure what direction I was going to go in, and I just was always, the health and wellness space was always important to me. I realized how important training and fitness was for me when I played, not from a physical standpoint, but I realized later in my career more from a mental standpoint that I needed that endorphin rush. It was just good for me. I was a better partner, a better friend, a better husband, you know, when I was getting a little activity in my life. And so that kind of led to, you know, Club 16, Trevor Linden Fitness Brand. We've got 18 fitness clubs across the Lower Mainland in Vancouver, which led me to the Canadian Men's Health Foundation, which advocates for men's health and more so mental health, I think, since the pandemic especially. And then, and also working with great brands like the Colgate Total brand and, you know, their whole oral health campaign around prevention and, you know, really getting people to realize that, you know, oral health is also equals overall health. So I've been using the Colgate Total Prevention Program for the last several months and feel really good about being dentist ready, as we like to call it. Like, we all freak out when we got to go to the dentist. Like, oh my God, I hope what am I going to learn? And I think you can be very confident with using Colgate Total that you're going to have a good experience with a dentist and not have to worry. So I trust my oral health to Colgate Total.
I want to follow up on, but let's pull that thread a little bit more because I was a competitive kid and feared going to the dentist. But my dad would always say, hey, you don't have any cavities. You know, your friends can't say that. And I was like, oh, like I have something up on everyone else when they ask, do you have any cavities? No, I've got none. So it's almost like gamified, you know, trying to keep that going for as long as possible. But as an adult, I actually realized, like, above the cosmetic of having a good smile, that it does impact your physical ability, your internal health. Can you unpack that a little bit more about how many things are related to your oral health?
Yeah, I mean, you know, obviously the obvious are gum disease, gingivitis, you know, like issues with teeth that affects, you know, diabetes, which affects heart disease, all these things. And I think if you're conscious of your oral health and you're taking care of that, that's just one one check mark in the box. And if you're doing that, you're probably doing the other things that matter to overall health. So I think starting with the Colgate Total program is really your entry into taking care of yourself. But I think that I'm just really an enthusiast. And I think it's easy when you're in your 20s, you don't think about this stuff. But as we get older and we start understanding that we got to take care of ourselves, certainly men out there, whether it be, you know, their physical health, their mental health, their oral health, is all super important.
You talked about training, and I want to follow up on that because we stopped playing sports at around the same time. Now, you were a longtime NHLer, and I was a university athlete, but it was around the same time. And you couldn't force me into a gym after I stopped playing football at the University of Western Ontario because it was this place that I was forced to be. And now I want to be nowhere else.
I'm hearing you. Yes. Has that changed for you? Now?
It has a bit.
A little bit?
It has a bit. I was the athlete who always thought to myself, well, why are we doing max bench press? Like, if I'm lying on the ground pushing someone off me, something bad happened. Like, I would have been much better in the way training is now, where everything is much more sports specific.
Functional. Yeah.
And I can actually see the correlation.
So you're telling me there's no bench presses on the field then?
No.
When you play?
No.
Yeah.
Well, no. I mean, and maybe,
right, I get it. You're
maybe, you know, I understand if you're an offensive lineman and, you know, that push really means something. But what training did for me as an athlete, above, I think, than getting stronger and faster and whatnot, was the sweat equity.
Yeah.
Like the level of investment you were forced to put in when you have to make a hard decision on the field or whatnot, you're not really willing to waste that investment. How do you keep that? How do you correlate that into, you know, going into a fitness club and having a strong workout?
It's so awesome you say that because I said when I retired, I will never do another clean or front squat ever again because that hurts.
Have you?
Yes. Now I'm back to it. But I was off for a bunch of years. And I think that, you know, and to your point, that like early in my career, training and working out was really because I had to do it. As I got older, towards the end of my career, I trained because I loved to do it and it felt good and it helped me be a better person. And so I carried that with me. Now I did say when I retired, I'm not doing those crazy hard workouts anymore. I'm still going to be active and do things. They may be just different things I couldn't do when I played, like mountain bike, like ski. You know, I did a lot of hiking and that sort of stuff. But I do think that. I think what you're saying is that, you know, when you're competitive and you're training, those are hard miles. Those are that commitment to that's chasing a dream, that's chasing your goal, and to get there, this is what you need to do. Some of those workouts just hurt, and it does not, you know, and it's like the pain chamber, we like to call it. But I think it sets you up for the sacrifice and commitment that a lot of things take. You know, that there's sacrifice and commitment to any sort of goal you want to achieve. And in sports, it's being in the gym. But I have to say, I took a break from pushing weight for a while. And I have to say, I've turned 55 in April, and I'm really enjoying getting back in the gym. And I think just culturally, whether you're 25 or 75, you know, keeping resistance training is so important for our muscles and our bones and our balance and our, you know, as we age, we want to, I think more than ever now, we want to continue to live life to its fullest and do, be active with our kids and our grandkids. And so I think that's a real focus. I'm seeing that in, you know, at our clubs, people, older women for sure want to push weight and stay strong. And I think that's awesome.
Yeah. Now for me, even though there's still the competitive side, I don't want to train that way, but I still need some competition. So I'll run a 5K because I want to compete against the clock. Like I need some scoreboard, but it's transferred. And I won't run that 5K very fast. speaking of training, when he was still in the league, he was in town, I caught up and had a bite with Kevin Shattenkirk. And I was talking to him and I said, tell me about McDavid. Like, how is he different? How has he changed the game? And one of the things he said is the things he's doing on the ice are changing the way guys train in terms of what's possible. Like, mm-hmm. what we even think we can do, we'll try. It's transferred. And in the same way that, you know, Steph Curry has forced people and made it acceptable to take longer threes, people are training differently to have different applications on the ice. At your high level, can you see that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting. That's a fascinating point you just made, because and where did McDavid, what did McDavid see? He saw Sidney Crosby. You know, so he saw that, and then and now he's ramping it up. So now McDavid's the gold standard, doing things people have not seen. So how do we get to that? And that's, you know, now you're seeing it's the Bedards and the Celebrinis and the Gavin McKennas in Medicine Hat that's their gold standard now, you know? So it's amazing how the evolution of the game it just keeps ramping up. And, you know, my first year was 1988 in the National Hockey League, and boy, the players are just so much better, like for many reasons, but the game is better. The players are better, you know, seeing, you know, when I look at the Dallas Edmonton series, there is no way that Dallas should not be winning this series. They're better in goal. I think they're better on defense. They're deeper up front. I think their coach has more experience, which I know he does. But you've got two of the greatest players in the game that are delivering at a very high level, and that's the difference right now.
What's that like playing against when you're listening for your name? You want to, you know, jump over the boards and, you know, get another shift, but you're also thinking, all right, am I on the ice with him? Right. What's that dynamic like as an opposing player?
Well, I mean, that matchup, like, I mean, if you're a defenseman and you're out of the ice against Connor McDavid, you are very aware, and, you know, and the opposing team is doing everything they can to keep certain defensemen they have. They don't want them on the ice at all with Connor McDavid. And so that matchup becomes really, really important for me when I played. You know, obviously I was a forward, so I was knew who was defending all the time. And certainly one guy I'll point to that was always struck the fear of God in me was Scott Stevens, who, you know, because he could hurt you. You're always kind of aware of just what's happening on the other side.
Would he still strike the fear of God in you now, the way the game has changed, the way it's officiated?
100%.
Yeah.
And I think, I mean, just that he was such a good open ice hitter, and he was so strong. Like, he had such an edge to him. So, yeah, and even now, like, you know, with I think the game changed so much in 04 when, during the lockout competition committee, they took a lot of the hooking, the holding, the clutching, the grabbing, so it's faster now. And, it still strikes the fear of God in me.
The other way the game has changed is roster construction. The way the cap has moved, how people utilize assets. You know, I'm a firm believer that you look at the history, those teams that have had multiple runs, whether it's, you know, Chicago when those guys were young, or the Penguins when those guys were young, you got to try to win. LA, you got to try to win when you're young, because it gets expensive.
Yeah.
We're feeling that in Toronto, in a way, where how do you pay everyone and have a balanced roster? When you've done it, you've seen it as a player, you've seen it as an executive. When you look at where the game is now and managing those cap assets, is there any consistent truth to you?
I think it moves and it varies. You see teams that do it with, the goaltender light program. You know what I mean? You see it with, you know, them with a high-end goaltender. I mean, I think it's been particularly challenging in the National Hockey League because of the COVID, what COVID did to the cap and the payback and the stagnant cap in the last, and we've seen that change a lot coming up. And I just think there's so many, especially in the National Hockey League, because it's such a fast game. There's so much to chance. I mean, it's just, you know, in the NBA, I mean, there's ball possession, you know, and usually, you know, but in the NHL, there's just bounces and breaks and a hot goaltender and a bad break and a bounce and it's just, it happens so fast that I don't know. Like, if you look at the Toronto Maple Leafs and how they were constructed, you would say, like, I thought this was the year they're going to push through. This is the year they've got a chance to win. And I think it's just a, a reminder of how hard it is to win in all sports, but particularly hockey, is that, damn, it's hard to get there. And 31 teams lose. And teams that thought they could win, and there's a lot of them, you know, Colorado, Winnipeg, Toronto, Washington, like, you know, Carolina, like all good teams, all sitting at home right now. And, you know, we're looking at, you know, Dallas on the brink of going home. And I picked them to win the Stanley Cup, you know, a month ago because they looked great. And so you just, that's what's great about sports, but particularly hockey, because you just don't know. And that's why we love it.
Colorado and Washington have won before. So there are some players and some parts of the organization who have that residue that they can fall back on. The group in Toronto. Certainly there's cap considerations. There's market considerations in terms of the level of, you know, toxic feedback that you can get playing here when the goal isn't met. What do you prescribe in terms of what makes sense moving forward? If Keith Pelley calls you and I need some solicited consultation because we now don't have a president, when you look at this group, what would you say?
Well, I mean, I would say this. I think that any player, I think putting the fact that there's too much pressure, it's too hard, playing the Canadian market's crap. I think that, like, for, I just don't buy that. And that's a dangerous slope. That's a dangerous path to walk down if you're a player, that you're going to, you know what I mean? I'm not saying the players are doing that. I'm saying, but that's the talk. I mean, from the Tkachuk comments and such, but you know, within that locker room, that's the pressure. Every player, like, I mean, if that pressure isn't as great from what's inside you to what's inside your locker room, the organizational pressure to win, I mean, that's the pressure. It's not what, you know, you don't put this on what the media says or what fans say. The fans want to win just like the players do. And I mean, that was a hard loss. I mean, the way in which they lost, I mean, it's been several years now, the game seven failures. For those guys, it's a tough loss. I mean, and so, you know, I do think that you know, there is a DNA about guys that have the intestinal fortitude to push through difficult situations that has to be considered. You know, some of those decisions will be made by the you know, the Toronto Maple Leafs are not in control. They don't have control over what Mitch Marner is going to do. I don't know what his family will want to do, what he wants to do, if he, you know, that's going to be his decision as much as it is Toronto's. And the same goes for John Tavares. But you know, I mean, when Brendan, who I think deserves a lot of credit for the work he did, I mean, he was the steady hand. He was the stable force. Think about this organization in 2014 and 2015. I mean, boy, there was a lot of difficult situations going on there. And Brendan was the steady hand. And, you know, I think Brad Treliving is an outstanding person and a good hockey man, and as well as Craig Berube. So they're in good hands. But but there's definitely going to be some changes, and you know, and that's happens in the national. Every summer is interesting. This year, particularly more because of the result, and because of the situations with some of these players having the right to choose their own destination.
Yeah, there's a conversation about, you mentioned Mitch Marner and his ability in those big moments. I struggle with that because Canada's not winning, you know, a gold medal if Mitch Marner doesn't make two of the biggest plays in the tournament. So I can't imagine that this pressure is not as big as that. It's funny, when you're around these conversations for long enough, you remember how, you know, circular they become. There was a time, not that long ago, when people felt great Canadian players didn't want to play in Canada. Rather play in Florida and, you know, walk to the beach every day and have no one bother them and not pay state tax. And now you've got, you know, many Canadian players playing in Canada, and the conversation is, oh, it's too much pressure. When you played, was that an ongoing conversation on whether or not it's worth, you know, the balance of being a hero when you're great, but also the villain when you're not?
Yeah, I can speak from experience. And I'm going to say this in the 90s, we talked about Steve Yzerman. Couldn't get it done. Couldn't win a cup. Couldn't do it in the playoffs. And now, you know, that's not the narrative now. And so as it relates to Mitch Marner, I don't buy that. I think that, you know, every opportunity is unique. And just because they haven't done it doesn't mean they can't. That's not to say that Toronto won't go a different way and make a lot of changes. But I just think that situation and opportunity, you never know when that's gonna flip on its head. And so, you know, I played in Canada for 18 of my 20 years. And so, and even I'll talk about my experience in Montreal for a second. When I got traded there, you know, the team had just been sold. The Molson family just sold the team to the Mr. Gillette, who was an American businessman. I mean, the market was in tatters because they thought this was crazy. Anyways, I went to Montreal and we weren't very good and it was a hard place to play. But having through all that, I would say this is that I loved playing in Montreal because people cared. And you know what? And it wasn't easy. I mean, I was a highly paid player. We weren't doing well. I took a lot of criticism, a lot of heat, but you know what though? I knew it because they cared and I wouldn't want to be any other place. And it wasn't too long ago that we were talking about the Florida Panthers and it was nobody wanted to play there because it was a dumpster fire. Okay. So, and we've got two of the greatest players in the game that are just going to re-up in Edmonton for the rest of their careers because they love Edmonton and playing in Canada and it means something special to them. So, you know, I mean, I don't buy that playing in Canada and players don't want to do it because it's too hard. I think guys love playing in hockey markets. Guys love playing in places where the people care and they want a chance to win. That's the bottom line.
You're still, you know, in love with the game. You can hear it, you know, in the way you speak about it and your passion. Are you done with it formally? Can you see yourself answering one of those LinkedIn messages? And formally, you know, talking about entertaining, you know, getting on the side of the microphone where I'm asking you tough questions.
Yeah, no, I am so grateful, boy, for a kid growing up in Medicine Hat in the 70s and being able to live out his dream as a professional hockey player and even going back to work with the team for 5 years as the president of hockey ops I love that experience. My son was born in 2017. I left the team in 2018 and, you know, life is full. Life is great. I am got lots going on and super passionate about what I'm doing right now. So I can say that, I'm going to be, I've had an amazing run in hockey and I still love the game. I love sports. And I think sports is one of the greatest gifts of our life. It's the best reality show going. And so I love it, but I'm going to watch from the sidelines.
You're smiling when you say that for our audience to know, because this is an audio medium. So I believe you when you say that, but we're just going to bookmark that audio just in case.
All right.
There's a press conference.
Mark the tape then.
That's right. Yeah, in 10 years, you're holding up some jersey. Can say, he's changed his mind. You mentioned your role as an executive. We've seen over the last little bit different structures in the front office. Yep. And, you know, you've got presidents, you got VP of hockey operations, you got GMs. Yep. To me, on the sideline, I'm just thinking, are we just giving different titles and org chart and all the jobs end up being the same? Or is there fundamental difference in how the different organizations are being set up?
Yeah, I would say this. I think that, you know, let's just talk about the Toronto Maple Leafs for a second, back in 2014 when Brendan was hired. And this was an organization that had tried to rebuild and fast forward on a rebuild and get it done quicker. And so, because ultimately, when a new GM comes in, they have their head buried on that season, okay? And what the president of hockey ops can do is say, oh, no, I'm looking at a five-year plan. Well, the GM says, well, that's fine, but I may not make it 5 years, so I'm going to make decisions for now. And then the president says, no, you don't understand. I'm talking to the ownership group, and this is the plan. So we need to make our decisions based on this five-year plan, not this one-year plan. And so, and I think ultimately the president role is to assess the job the hockey ops people are doing for ownership. I mean, with all due respect, a lot of owners either don't want to or are not capable of assessing where the team is, you know, hearing it, the truth, not to save. Like I always said when I was in that role, the ownership, listen, I'm not here because I need a job. I'm here to tell you exactly what I think. And you may not like it, but I want to tell you the truth, and I'm going to give you the straight goods on where I think this team is and what our path should be. And so I think that's the value in that role.
That's interesting, because we certainly have seen in other sports where job number one for the GM is keep the job.
Yeah.
And sometimes the best decisions holistically for the organization aren't made when that is
100%
the mindset.
Absolutely.
Talking about good holistic decisions, as we end this conversation in a way where we started it, I'll go back to the high level of athletes we see in the NHL. And people, you know, when they criticize them, and, you know, he's a bum, or he's not good, or he chokes. And I'm thinking, you don't get to that level without being insanely competitive, insanely driven, right? You just don't, right? You don't. Yeah. No one can get that good based off of just, you know, God-given talent alone. I know this because, as I mentioned, talking about and thinking about my health, I looked up on my iPhone. I wonder what my VO max is, right? Because there's so many indicators in terms of health and where you should be, whether the range is. And I was like, let me look up just the best athletes, the best hockey players. And when I saw the gulf of difference, I was like, oh my goodness, we are different species. So with that, are there some very easy, not easy in terms of the discipline and consistency that's needed, but easily in terms of implementing it into your life, are there some easy, scary things that people can do right away to make sure they're on the right path in terms of improving their health?
Yeah, you know, I that's a great question. I'm an advocate for men's health, and the Canadian Men's Health Foundation, their website is incredible. I mean, they have ways for men, because here's the thing. Guys like talking about sports, their cars, playing golf. They don't want to talk about themselves, their health, their mental health. Like, women are way better at this than we are. But that's not an excuse. We need to be better. We need to take care of ourselves for our kids, our families, for ourselves. And so the Canadian Men's Health Foundation, their website is amazing. And, you know, there's tools on there that can help you assess your physical well-being. They can help you with some mental, you know, but I think from a physical standpoint, like fitness, moving your body is good for your mental health. Those go hand in hand. And I would say to anyone, just start slow. Start with, and remember, physical activity is much a mental break and a way to connect with a buddy. Perhaps you go for a bike ride. Perhaps you go for a hike. Perhaps you go for a walk. I mean, you connect. Maybe you go by yourself and just have some solo time and just no phone, just being present. And so I just say start slow, and but get the information you need. Dig into some of this stuff, because at the end of the day, I think everyone's goal is to you know, spend time with their families and enjoy their kids and do the things they want to do for as long as they can.
Well, you certainly are doing that and staying booked and busy when you're not doing that. So I appreciate you carving out the time to have this conversation. It was really,
awesome.
Really something that both me and our audience will benefit from.
Awesome. Good to be with you. Thank you.
Thanks to Trevor, Mike, and Jasmine, and thank you for listening. Hope you enjoyed that one. Please like, favorite, share, and subscribe. We've got more great episodes for you on the way. Talk soon.